Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 771. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beaches and turtles, waterfalls and sun bears, orangutans and proboscis monkeys as we go to Sabah in Malaysia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Sabah on the island of Borneo. I'd like to welcome to the show Howard Stanton, who is coming to us from Borneo, more specifically from the region of Sabah. And Howard is the owner of an Eco Adventure resort in the area. Howard, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. And I hope I can enlighten your listeners to the ideas of coming to Sabah.
Well, I asked around and said I was looking for people to talk about coming to Borneo, to the various regions of Borneo. We can get into that there's more than one. And I was told, Howard, you were the guy, so.
Yeah, okay, great. I hope to enlighten people and encourage people to come, because Borneo is a fantastic place, absolutely fantastic place to come.
Well, and when we talk about Borneo and there being different regions, so tell us a little more, what is Sabah versus the rest of Borneo, for instance?
So Borneo, third largest island in the world, is actually made up of three different sort of countries, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Two-thirds of it is the Indonesian side, Indonesian Borneo, and that's like the bottom two-thirds. Then there's Brunei, the Sultanate of Brunei. Mm-hmm. And then Malaysia has two states on Borneo. One is called Sarawak, and then the other one is Sabah. And that's where I live. I live in Sabah. Sabah is roughly the size of the UK.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that big. Okay. Or that the UK was that small. I guess there's two ways of looking at that, but
it is. It's very large. And actually, that's one of the slight problems that people have, is they underestimate the size of the place.
Right.
So getting from one side to the other can take like a whole day of traveling. So when they start to plan their itineraries, they look at what they want to see, and then they start to plan to get there, but underestimate the travel time, which can cause problems if people are on a shorter schedule, as it were, shorter itinerary.
Excellent. And Borneo, obviously, being close by Indonesia, close by Malaysia, that's why they have portions of that. So we're in the Pacific, getting closer to Asia, and you're in the upper right-hand corner of Borneo. Why should someone come to Sabah?
Oh, that's a great question. Sabah is a fantastic place. It's unique. It's 37 different indigenous cultures. Mm-hmm. It's naturally tremendously beautiful. It has mountains, fantastic beaches, jungle, and a very big depth of culture with those 37 indigenous races of people. One of the reasons I live here, it's very safe, and the people are the big draw. They're wonderful people, very hospitable. They're very naturally hospitable, very friendly, very willing to help. It's the people, but also the natural environment. It's the combination of the two. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for to get somewhere with a unique culture that can be combined with exploring nature, one of the oldest rainforests in the world has Mount Kinabalu, fantastic diving, great water sports on the beaches. It's an all-round great sort of destination to come to, really.
Well, and we may be confusing people because they may be thinking right now that you're speaking with a Sabah accent.
Ah, no. I can speak Malay, but yeah, I'm originally from England, from a small town called Stratford-upon-Avon, which is famous for Shakespeare. I've been in Sabah now for 18 years. I originally came here for 3 years 23, 24 years ago. I came back here 15 years ago to run a big resort hotel, but that wasn't going to work out. I mean, no fault of mine. But I was offered the opportunity to buy some land up here at the tip of Borneo, and I bought it with every single penny I had. And then we started to set our place up, Tampat Do Aman, January 2011. And we've been expanding and growing since then. The indigenous people of the area I am in are called the Rungus people, and they have tremendous depth of culture and cuisine and everything else that a different culture has to offer. And that's surrounded by the natural beauty. Probably, I mean, I may be a bit biased, but I would say that the coastline up here at the tip of Borneo, with the beaches and the ruggedness and the jungle meeting the sea and all that, and the seafood on offer, and it's one of the better places to be in Sabah. But it was a very underdeveloped place. We were one of the first businesses here to start up tourism. So it's a very undiscovered place. Very beautiful, very wild. It's got tons of goodness to offer.
Okay, well, let's get a little more specific. What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend? Where are we going to start and what are we going to do first?
The majority of people will fly into Kota Kinabalu. That's the state capital of Sabah. It's a great place to start, to get acclimatized to what's going on around you, with the sights, the sounds, the smells, the people, etc. Lots and lots and lots to do. But if time constraint was an issue, I would certainly suggest the islands off the coast of Kota Kinabalu. It's called the Tunkul Abdul Rahim Marine Park. And that's five islands that are based just a stone's throw from the capital itself. And you can get a boat from Jesselton Point out to the islands. To do all five islands in one day would be pretty tiring. I would suggest choosing one or maybe two of the islands to spend the majority of time.
Do you have a favorite?
Mamutik would be my favorite, an island called Mamutik, because it's very underdeveloped. Not very many people go there, and it's quiet and tranquil, good snorkeling, nice beach. But the other islands are also very good. The two main islands are Sapi and Manukan. And Sapi is a place where a lot of the mass tourism market gets taken to. You can feel a bit one of a few thousand people all crammed onto a beach. I mean, that said, you can still find your own little niche by taking one of the hiking trails and going to one of the further beaches or onto the northern coastline of the island. Great snorkeling. There are places there that you can get food. There's a little cafeteria there and that sort of stuff. And it's one of your quintessential island sort of getaways. But unfortunately, nowadays, you can be surrounded by mass tourism.
So when I go there, I'm going to be spending time on the beach or snorkeling, or what kind of things are you going to recommend that I'm doing while I'm at either Sapi or Mamutik?
Both locations is exactly that. It's spending time on the beach, Okay. Maybe recovering from your flight and just taking in the ambiance, and snorkeling and having a swim and relaxing. It's like the first day. Get away from it, recover from your flight, and have a relaxing time. The tip from the top, I would just recommend, warn people, is the sun, because we're very close to the equator here, so The sun can be very strong. So never underestimate the power of the sun. You don't want to be flying in for your holiday and then the first day you get sunburn and find it difficult to go and do anything else. So that would be my tip from the top.
Okay, so if I'm snorkeling, I might think about not even just suntan lotion, but also maybe wearing one of the protective all-over sun suits, or what do you call those for snorkeling?
Yeah, sun suits or rash guards.
Right, rash guards, exactly.
And then the other island is Manukan. Manukan's a very beautiful island. It has been taken over by one of the resort companies, Magellan Sutra Harbour Resort Company. There is like a little resort on it, so the access to food and beverage is there, although it can be a little bit pricey. But because of that, really, the mass tourism generally tends to stay away, and you'll get a much quieter time. You'll still get the beach and the snorkeling and all that, but it's a bit of a quieter time than Sapi.
And when you say a bit expensive, are we saying expensive by Sabah standards, by Malaysia standards, by U.S. standards? What is expensive in the area?
I mean, to a Westerner, probably mid-range of costs. To somebody coming from Malaysia or from Sabah, then it can be a little bit pricey. But for a Westerner, it's pretty good. And it's good quality food. You'd feel like you got your money's worth. I wouldn't say you went there and suddenly felt isolated and you had to start shelling out half your budget for a burger, but you'd be pretty good. You'd feel satisfied, and you didn't. I don't think you'd feel that you were being ripped off.
Okay, got it. Where to next?
Yeah, so Kota Kinabalu itself, there's cultural villages, these companies that have set up to give you an idea about the cultures of Sabah.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly a couple of those that would be good to have a drop into. The main places for eating that people generally go to is the Filipino market, which is on the waterfront in Kota Kinabalu. Tremendously good fresh seafood at very good local prices. You'll turn up and there'll be maybe 200 stalls, all wanting to sell you all sorts of different cuisines from all over Sabah, with the main base of it being the seafood. So the seafood is tremendous.
And that's the one that the official name has been changed to the Kota Kinabalu Handicraft Market, so I can also do my handicraft shopping there. Am I in the right place?
You're in the right area, yeah. The handicraft market is next to it.
Okay.
That's a great place to get your souvenirs, your cheap pearls, your cheap souvenirs and T-shirts and sarongs and bits and pieces like that. But then next to that is the food market.
Got it.
It's a real hustle-bustle in the evening. So you get a good atmosphere. It's a great place to sit, munch on your prawns or whatever else, or have a coconut and watch the world go by. You'll see all sorts of hustle and bustle going on around you. It's very safe. It's a great place just to sit back, relax, take your time eating, soak up the ambiance, have a very delicious meal for, in relative Western terms, not very much money.
And not very much money, we're talking $5-ish, something like that?
Maybe a little bit more than that, if you're going to go for some big prawns, but maybe a little bit more of that, $8 to $10, as it were.
All right. And you mentioned the cultural villages, so this is a place that's set up to look more traditional, the way that people would have lived 100 years ago or something like that, where I can see traditional dances and that kind of things. Am I on the right track?
That's right, exactly, yeah. So the peoples of Sabah are very famous for their different buildings, architectural different buildings built from natural materials. One of the main ones that a lot of the cultures actually adopted was the longhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You can go and visit these cultural centers, and they've got different cultural groups set up in different areas. And you're right, you get to try a little bit of the local rice wines, you get to try a little bit of the food, you get to see the traditional dances of a couple of the ethnic groups. It's like a one-stop, get a feel for Sabah's cultural identity and get your fill of it. And it's great. There's one place called Monsopiad, which is a Monsopiad cultural village, and there's another one out towards a place called Inanam, and the name escapes me. The one out towards Inanam, I actually took my parents to a few years ago, and they really enjoyed it. They really enjoyed the convenience of a one-stop place to get a feel for the place. It's not a full day, it's an afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, you can sign up for these things either at Sabah Tourism Board, which is on Gaya Street in the center of KK, or any of the tour companies offer these things. They pick you up from your hotel, they'll take you there, and they'll bring you back. It's convenient. And it's well set up. It's a well set up, well-oiled machine, as it were, which is great. Again, food-wise, because Kota Kinabalu has such a diverse mix of races, mm-hmm. the Chinese food is phenomenal. There's a type of cuisine called bakute. I forget what bakute means. Tay something. It's pork. I've just got to quickly add that for any Muslim listeners. But it's pork marinated in a special herbal soup. And the best one for that, I mean, there's lots of them in KK, is opposite a hotel called Jesselton Hotel. Again, I don't know the name of the restaurant, but it's directly opposite. You'll easily recognize it because in the evenings it will be absolutely packed. And not with tourists, but with locals. It's renowned as the place to go if you want to eat bakute. But there are many, many different little restaurants, stalls that you can go and just sample and then move on to somewhere else and sample a bit more from there and then move on to somewhere else. The Malaysians love food. It's one of the good things about the Malaysians. I love food as well. So you get to have a different taste wherever you go, whether you're into the Malay food, your beef rendangs, your chicken rendangs, mm-hmm. your potato ayams, whether you're into Filipino food, Korean food, Japanese food. It's all here. Some of the best cuisine. And because of the proximity to the ocean and to the agricultural lands up near Ranau and Kundasang, and a lot of these recipes have been passed down from generations, it's great. Really, really good. For nightlife, there's an area on the waterfront, which is, it's more of a modern area. It's part of a reclaimed land. It's built up on stilts. And along there, there's lots of great bars, some great restaurants as well, actually. Some great, there is one particular great Indian restaurant along there. I think it's a Tandoori restaurant. But along there, that's where the nightlife is. You've got some great bars. It's always a lively scene. You get to sit amongst the local guys who are enjoying their night out. It's a mixture of draft beers from across the world with cocktails thrown in as well. There's a reflexology stand there. So as you're having a pint, you could also have your foot massage. But yeah, it's a very, very good place to be.
And the name of the neighborhood is what?
The Waterfront. Everybody the knows waterfront. It as the Waterfront. Okay. Yeah. You jumped into a taxi and said, oh, the Waterfront. The taxi driver would for sure know where you meant. Just up from there, there's one of the shopping centers that has a Hard Rock Cafe in it. The Waterfront is the main hub of the area. Always lively and always a great place to be.
Well, and you mentioned jumping into a taxi and saying the Waterfront. How well can I get around not knowing any Malay, knowing English?
Very well. KK isn't a big place. The mm-hmm. center of KK is quite small. It's much better to walk around, in my opinion, because then you get the feels, the smells, the sights. You get to have an all-round feeling of the place. But because English is part of the curriculum for the schools, English is very widely spoken, and especially in Kota Kinabalu. Tourism is a big part of the economy mm-hmm. of Kota Kinabalu. The tourism players have realized the importance of speaking English to be able to communicate with the tourists. And so you wouldn't really see very many people at all who can't speak English. Most places, all the hotels would have like little maps in their foyer, little handout flyer things you can take with the maps on. Very easy to get around. Very, very easy to get around. If you're looking to go maybe a little bit outside the city centre or something, maybe to Tanjungaru Beach to watch the sunset, this is always a very beautiful sunset, with, again, great food stalls, you might want to grab a Grab because they've got set up here.
Grab a Grab taxi.
Yeah, got it. Yeah. Download that and they're very good. I don't know about Uber. They might be here, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah. Anything else we want to do in KK? I love the fact, by the way, that you call it KK in a country whose capital is KL.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
I sense a theme here.
I mean, we just follow what the local guys say, and KK is unique. There's a state museum. That's quite interesting mm-hmm. as regards to giving you more about the culture and the history. There is actually a train, the only train on Borneo. It's run by Magellan Sutra Harbour. There's the train for, like, say, the commuters that come from further down south, Puta Tang, Papa, and places like that. But there is also an old steam train that they run, the original steam train, and you can go on board that, buy a ticket, be met at the gate with a guy in his pith helmet and his traditional colonial sort of attire. Get on board, have your lunch served to you in a tiffin set, and watch the countryside go by. Like a unique experience. Especially if you're a train buff, I suppose.
I am a train buff, but you lost me at tiffins set.
Okay. So tiffins, that's like metal tins.
Okay.
Stacked. And inside each different compartment of the metal tin will be a different sort of meal. So your okay. rice in the bottom, and then your veggies, and then your chicken or your beef or whatever. Served to you by these guys. Because it's associated with the Sutra Harbour Resort, a five-star resort, these guys are waiters and waitresses who come and they wait on you hand and foot and can explain the surroundings to you while you're having your meal and then an afternoon tea on your way back. And they give you the opportunity to get off at different stops for about 20 minutes, I think, to go and visit a temple, a Chinese temple, have a walk around an old colonial railway station. And then you get to Papar, which is a little bit further down south, and you have a little break there. You can go into the local markets and have a look at the wet markets, just out of interest, see what the produce is like, which is, I think, is always good.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can jump back on the train again and head back.
And I'm seeing it's about a five-hour duration all told, and the name of it is the North Borneo Railway, if I'm in the right place.
That's the one, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's the only railway in Borneo. So,
that's why I figured I was in the right place.
And apart from that, other things to do in KK, I mean, sit and have a beer, maybe on Gaya Street, which is the backpackery sort of street. lots of hustle and bustle. On a Sunday morning, actually, Gaya Street Market. That's when all the locals come down and sell their produce and meet up. And it's been going for many, many years. It's a great place to sit, have a cup of coffee and watch the world go by, but also a great place to see what produce is being brought. For Westerners, they're always amazed at the different amounts of fruits and jungle produce that can be comes out of the jungle. Again, it would just be great. It's a Sunday morning, runs from about 7 o'clock in the morning till about 11:30.
Butcher Box is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first Butcher Box. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
And you'll see a whole different array of things, goods and everything being sold. It's a locals market, but it's very interesting for any tourism people that are arriving just to get a feel for the place.
If you had somebody visiting from Stratford-on-Avon and you sent them there, is there a particular type of fruit you'd say, oh, you should try this, you're never going to find it at home, and it's the best? Uh-huh.
Well, there will be a lot of debate about this from the Malaysian fraternity, sure, that's for sure.
Sure.
Two of my favorite fruits. One is called mangosteen.
Okay, yep.
They're like a little round thing. You break it open and you eat the white fleshy meat on the inside. It's very tasty.
Mm-hmm.
Rambutan, a soft, spiky sort of horse chestnut. And you break that open and get into the white fleshy meat inside. Mm-hmm. There's a stone in the middle. Both of them can have a stone in the middle. So those are two of my favorites. Also, I do like jackfruit.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I do as well.
Now, the debate would come when you get presented with the fruit called durian.
Now, yes.
And I love it. Or hate it. There's no two ways about it. Personally, I think the taste isn't the best in the world. It stinks. It's sort of a bit more of a wetty sock smell to it.
Kerosene was what some people described it as, but the smell.
Yeah, all sorts of people have different ways of describing it. Kerosene, I've heard as well. It's unique, that's for sure. But for me, it's that what puts me off is the texture of it.
Hmm.
Cottage cheese sort of texture surrounding a stone, and it's the texture that puts me off. The Malaysians and the visiting Chinese, Taiwanese populations, they love it. They absolutely love it, and it's one of the big attractions. You'll see on the side of the road stalls, as you're heading up to Mount Kinabalu or to wherever, on their stalls selling it, and there'll be busloads of people parked up, all devouring the durian on the side of the road. Personally, I just keep driving. Everybody has different tastes. So the longans, the langsats, tons of different jungle fruits, which are unique to the area and definitely worth trying. Matakuching, that's one of my favorites as well. That actually means cat's eye. You'll have to discover that for yourselves, but basically, it's a little ball, and you break open the outer skin, and yes, it looks like a cat's eye because it's got a stone in the middle. You suck off the surrounding flesh and spit out the stone, but it's very delicious as well. Half the goodness of coming to somewhere like Sabah that is so rugged and wild and has such good produce is trial and error and having a go at everything. There's such an array to choose from to keep anybody's palate tantalized. It's a great thing to get involved in, really. It doesn't cost the earth for any of this. If you went to a fruit stall and said, I'm not quite so sure what to have, these guys here, Saba, mega friendly, the stall holders will say, well, here you go, try one of these. Okay, try another one of these then, try one of these. And you'd probably be ended up having your lunch just tasting these different things. That's how hospitable the people are. They're wonderful.
Anything else we want to do in KK before we move on?
With limited time, I'd say just doing those things are good enough. There's so much outside of KK to get involved with. Most probably head back to KK anyway, and by then you will have had a better idea of what to do and how to do it and be good. Probably if you're looking for things to do, nothing better than stopping by Saba Tourism Office on Gaya Street and just inquiring there as what do they think, what's going on, what festivals might be happening. There are 22 public holidays in Malaysia. Because it's a nation made up of all different nationalities and origins and everything, the Chinese, the Indians, the indigenous, the Malays. So there's always festivals and things happening. And so to keep up to date when you arrive in KK, a visit to Saba Tourism and have a little chat with one of the two of the people in there would also enlighten you on what's going on. And you may find that you've arrived during Chinese festival like Chap Gourmet, or you find you've arrived during Hari Raya or Kamatan. If you've arrived in Kamatan, you're in luck. Around about, I think that's May the 31st. And that's when all the indigenous peoples get together at a cultural center just on the outskirts of Kota Kinabalu called KDCA, Kadazan Dusun Cultural Association, I think it is. That is wonderful. If you arrived during that time, head there. You will meet some of the best people you're ever going to meet in the world. You'll be drinking rice wines of all different varieties, having your cultural experience and all that under one roof. You'd have a fantastic time. KDCA in a place called Penampang, just on the outskirts of Kota Kinabalu, about a 15-minute car ride from the very center of Kota Kinabalu. If you're here for that harvest festival, that's a must, an absolute must. But yeah, apart from that, in KK, I'd use your time wisely and get out and see the rest of Sabah.
And where would you take us to next?
So the general well-worn path of people coming to Sabah is to probably head up towards the mountain, Mount Kinabalu, Southeast Asia's highest peak. You don't have to climb it. It is a two-day climb. In some of the guidebooks, it says, it's a walk of the park. 80-year-olds can do it backwards, and you know, it makes it sound so easy. Actually, it's not. I've done it 16 times, twice running, which is they have an annual climathon race running up and down it. I certainly wouldn't recommend that. Around the base of it, the national park, very unique flora and fauna, bird life and plants and everything else. You can see pitcher plants, Nepenthes, ones that eat the flies and all that. It's a much cooler area to be in. So one of the things that first hits you when you do get off the plane in Kota Kinabalu is the heat and the humidity. It can wallop you. And if you're not used to it, you can be a bit, blimey. But Mount Kinabalu is the place to escape it. It's cool. It's fresh air. Great walking around it, the national park area. One of the, I think, very good attractions of the place is the War Memorial. And the War Memorial is based in the township of Kundasang. It documents and lets you know about a lot of the history of Borneo. During the war, Borneo was occupied by the Japanese.
World War II, yeah.
In World War II, that's right, occupied by the Japanese. They didn't go down very well with the local population, put it that way. Yeah, they weren't particularly very nice to everybody. And there is a very famous event that happened. It's now known as the Death March. And they marched in the prisoners of war from Sandakan all the way to Kundasang. And they put them into prison there, and then eventually they did away with the majority. The only guys that survived out of 3,400 started it, were six guys who escaped. And they had the the help of the local guys to help them escape, basically through food and shelter. The rest of them didn't survive the march. It's somber, but the war memorial is extremely well done, very well put together. But it gives you an idea. Again, it gives you an idea of the history, and it's very good. It's probably about an hour and a half's worth of walking around it. It's great. Outside of that, Kundasang Market. Kundasang is the veggie patch of Sabah. It's where a lot of the fresh produce, the veggies, are all produced. And so the markets in Kundasang, great to walk around to see the different varieties of vegetables and fresh produce that it produces. And then walk around the national park area is great. If you did want to climb it, you'd have to book ahead. You'd book it through the National Park Service of Sabah, most probably in Kota Kinabalu, or you would take up one of the tour company's packages and do it that way. To me, it's got very pricey. Basically, you start early in the morning. You spend about 5-6 hours climbing up to a place called Laban Ratap, which is cold. When you get there, you need a jacket and a woolly hat and, you know, a pair of gloves and long trousers and all the rest of it. You'd have your dinner there and you'd go to bed very early. If you're staying up past 8 o'clock at night, you're a party animal. You'd have a good night's, well, you probably would have done a good night's sleep because of the lack of oxygen. But and then your porters and your guides will come and wake you up again at 2 o'clock in the morning. And then you do the last part of the climb in the dark. Mm-hmm. I've not been up there since the renovations. They had some renovations after an earthquake and they put some steps up. Apparently it's got a lot easier. But you climb up and then you summit just in time for sunrise. You're all on top of the summit. It's 4,101 meters high, so it's cold. You'll get a good sense of achievement, but for sure, it's not for everybody. The lack of oxygen at that level could give you altitude. Mm-hmm. No one ever knows if they're going to get that, but it's a workout, and it's a full-on workout. And then you spend that next day making your way down. And you'll probably arrive back at the National Park headquarters having had lunch at around about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. But you probably need 2 or 3 days to let your legs recover because your legs will be throbbing like there's no tomorrow. Unless you're trying to build your itinerary with straight after that, heading back to Kota Kinabalu to sit on a beach and get your legs into the water in the South China Sea, I suggest you don't bother with that, especially if you're on a week's itinerary.
Is there something that you would recommend instead? I see canopy walks and those sort of easier activities, wildlife hikes and things like that. What would you recommend for the typical tourist?
One of the best places, I think, value for money to do all this is a place called Pouring Hot Springs. Now, that's on the other side of the mountain if you're coming from Kota Kinabalu. It's a place where, as the name suggests, has got hot springs. Borneo is a part of the Pacific Ring of Fire, has volcanic activity sometimes. No active volcanoes, mind. But because of the water situation, the water does come up through and you get these hot springs. And they're great to get into. It is a little bit commercially. They've put concrete baths in there and you sort of hire your little concrete bath and get into it. But other people can get into them with you. You know, it can be a bit crowded. And if you go out the back of the hot springs area, you can get yourself up to Canopy Walkway. Very accessible. You hike up through the jungle, possibly about 500-600 meters, and then you can get on, as it says, a canopy tree walkway. So you go on these walkways. The base of it is a ladder surrounded by netting, and you walk from tree to tree through the canopy. And it's a unique experience. You get a good sense of the jungle and what's around you, which is great. And then you can come down. Now, to me, a lot of people make the mistake then of just scurrying out through the hot springs and back to the car park and off they go. There's actually a couple of other things to do. There's some great hikes onwards to some waterfalls. The nearest one is about 2 kilometers. And you can get up to the waterfalls there. The water's cold, unlike the hot springs. But you can have a swim in the waterfall there. You can even dip your feet in the water. And there's a little type of fish. Like I think it's a type of guppy that comes up and gives you foot a massage, nibbles at your feet, taking off the dead skin. And then there is another waterfall, which is another 7 kilometers further along from that. So for that, you'd have to be prepared. You'd have to take your water and snacks and wet weather gear and all that sort of thing to be prepared. Also outside the back of the Pouring Hot Springs, which not a lot of people go to, is the National Orchid Center. So if you're into your botany and your plants, outside the back of that is the National Orchid Center. I've walked around it a couple of times because I like orchids. Because it's not very much visited, does come across as a bit neglected. That's not necessarily the fault of the people that run it, but more of the fault that of the environment that it's in. And the weather here, because of the humidity, the heat, and all that, it eats away at everything. You're always fighting Mother Nature, and you're never going to win. So, yeah, it can look a bit downtrodden, but it's very good. If you're into your orchids and you want to see the unique species and take that in, it's a good place to stop at. And then from Pouring Hot Springs, you'd probably head back towards Ranau. And from Ranau, in that area then, and I'm going to get shot by the people that live in that area for not mentioning some other places perhaps, but those are the main things. And then you go to Ranau and onwards from Ranau.
And before we do that, the one other thing I wanted to mention about Mount Kinabalu is that it is a UNESCO World Heritage Site for those people who collect those, as I am one of those. So.
And it's beautiful. I'm trying to think of other UNESCO World Heritage Sites in Borneo now.
There's only one in Sabah. The other one is in Sarawak, the Gunung Mulu National Park.
Right, okay, with the cave systems in it, Deer Cave and everything, yeah.
Yeah.
Again, another great place to visit if you've got the time, but it would be a flight to get down there, a couple of flights, actually, from KK. Yeah. Okay. On the way to Sandakan, there is the Tea Gardens, Sabah Tea Gardens. So there is an area of Sabah that grows tea. Tea gardens are quite interesting and informative on the tea productions, and it gives that, they got some lovely cottages to stay in there, and it gives that sort of colonial era feel to everything. You know, you're high up in the mountains overlooking the tea fields, fresh air. You sleep well at night because of the coolness of the place. And then onwards from there, you probably get to Telupid. Here, there are some the places that are off the beaten track, as it were. Not so much in the guidebooks and all that, but there's some lovely waterfalls to get out and visit. If you've hired your own car, it's going to be very accessible because you can just see the signs on the side of the road. So-and-so waterfall, 5 kilometres up the road or something like that. But there's some great places up there, like little eco-y lodges that have been done. Oh, I might just mention the homestay aspects of accommodation in Borneo. One of the underestimated places to stay. It is fantastic. It's very well set up. I've been to it and experienced it around Mount Kinabalu, staying in the village of Kiao. It's wonderful. Guys from these areas have done up their homes and you're accepted in as a friend. They'll cook for you. They'll take you on walks around the villages, take you to little streams and waterfalls that are tucked away, and you can have your own waterfall to have a swim in. The food they cook is tremendous and it's just extremely hospitable. And it's one of these things that can be overlooked. All over Sabah, these homestay aspects of things are very, very well put together.
And what's the best way to find one of those? Because I know some of the listeners are saying, that's for me, as they hear you talking about this.
Well, we stumbled upon it, really, when when I got into it. But if you went to Sabah Tourism and Gaya Street in Kota Kinabalu, they'd certainly give you a whole list of the different locations and the people to get in contact with. But I should imagine also on the website, Sabah Tourism has a great website. On their websites, you'd be able to find information, or if not, you'd certainly be able to contact somebody and ask for information. I don't know if Homestays of Sabah has its own website, but possibly. But yeah, recommended.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, actually, they do have some homestays listed on the website.
Yeah, some good ones out there.
And then you were heading over to?
Towards Sandakan.
Sandakan, okay.
Sandakan, yeah. Sandakan is a town of two places, if that makes sense. A town of three places, actually.
Okay.
I'm going to get shot by the Sandakan Municipal Council, but downtown Sandakan, around the waterfront, it's an interesting place to be, but it does give the impression of being quite run down. That said, I've not been there for about 5-6 years, but it does give an impression of being quite renowned. The waterfront area there is pretty good, with different restaurants and places to stay. There's a big 5-star hotel there. I think it's a Hyatt or a Marriott hotel. And then but majority of things in Sandakan have moved a little bit out of the center. In fact, 4 miles outside the center. It's called Mile 4. And that's where a lot of the food stalls are, the restaurants, the nightlife, and that sort of thing is on the outskirts there. So Mile 4. Because one of the main reasons for going to Sandakan are more for the things outside of Sandakan, on the outskirts. You've got Sepilok Orangutan Rehabilitation Center, which is like possibly the number one tourist destination in Sabah. Two feeding times, because you turn up the rehabilitation center and you get parked up in the car park, and then you walk in and you get either the 10 o'clock in the morning feeding time or the 2 o'clock in the afternoon feeding time. Now, my recommendation would be to, go there in the morning, because there's lots to do. Directly opposite, you could throw a stone at the entrance to it, is the Sun Bear Conservation Center, which I was actually helped to build many years ago, or build the boardwalks to enter it. It's a home of the Sun Bear Conservation Center. I would recommend going and doing that in the morning. The reason being is that a lot of the mass tourism markets, China and Taiwan and places like that are quite close. Those guys will be on a schedule of rush, 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 get it done, just get your phone. Take them to the orangutan and scoot off. Now, they generally they'll be staying in somewhere in Sandakan, jump on a bus, get to Sandakan Orangutan Rehabilitation Center for the 10 o'clock feeding. They'll go in, and in my opinion, it detracts away from what it's about. So you've got the orangutans, that you've got this vision of you being the only one that's there, sort of watching these orangutans idyllically swing from tree to tree and be fed their breakfast. But unfortunately, you can be on this great big deck with between 400 and 600 other people, all with their cameras out, yakking away to try and get the best picture. So if you went to the Sun Bear Conservation Center in the morning, which is extremely interesting, extremely well put together, and has more of that sense of being away from the mainstream, and then you had lunch possibly in the little cafe just at the Sepilok at the rehabilitation center, great little cafe actually, and then waited and did the 2 o'clock in the afternoon feeding, I think you'd get more from it. You get more of a sense of goodness about the whole place. And then if you timed it well, I would personally stay within that Sepilok area.
Okay.
Edge of Forest, Sepilok Edge of Forest Reserve Resorts. There's lots of different places to stay, would meet different people's budgets. If you Googled Sepilok accommodation or accommodation in the Sepilok area, you'd come across a whole list of places, everything from a little backpacker to a more upmarket little resorty place. So if you stayed in one of those places the night before, walked up, sun bears in the morning, orangutans in the afternoon, and then you made your way up the road, possibly by walking, it's only about a mile and a half up the road, you come to a place called the Rainforest Discovery Center, RDC. And in there, it's one of the underestimated places that not too many people, it's not on the beaten track. It's fantastic. They've got medicinal and edible plant gardens. Mm. They've got canopy walkways. They're extremely well built, lakes and different areas for different types of plants. Hornbills. They have a bird festival there every year where the ornithologists flock to try and get a snap of a Borneo bristlehead, which is unique, endemic to the area. There's lots to do.
And I did not know that ornithologists flock, but that makes sense. So,
if you timed it well, coming out of the orangutans, Rainforest Discovery Center, they probably kick you out. I think they do. I think they kick you out in the afternoon. Late afternoon, sort of about 5:30, 6 o'clock. But then there is a night walk. They do a night walk. I think it's at 7:30, but you'd have to ask the ticket office when you get there. The night walk is phenomenal. It's one of these things that not many people do. It's not very well supported, in a sense, in a good way, because then the guides who are doing the night walk are so enthused about people actually turning up. They're all great people. and they'll give you a ton of information, and you'll see lots of different things. You'll see civet cats, slow lorises, fireflies in full swarm, tree frogs. You'll get a good sense of the jungle at night. It's great. It really is good. And for me, I don't think it's promoted as much as it should be, but it really is a good thing. Highly recommend that as well. And then outside of Sepilok, there is a place called Labuk Bay. I have to say, I've never been. That's where the proboscis monkey sanctuary is. And so the mass tourism market are racing to get to Sepilok to do the 10 o'clock feeding. And then generally they'll then jump back on their bus and head towards Labuk Bay. Apparently it's very good. Proboscis monkeys are a species of monkey that's indigenous to Borneo. Their noses are, they're very interesting to have a look at. There's another place that is good to go to. A lot of people go to it, but I've heard differing stories, to be honest. Sorry, Sava Parks. Sorry, I'm just giving you some feedback at the same time. And that is the Turtle Islands.
The national park.
The national park, yes. The name slips me, the name of the island. But anyway.
Taman Pulau Penyu.
Pulau Penyu. That's right. Penyu is turtle in Malay. Pulau is island. So it's Turtle Island, yeah.
Okay.
And what you would do, you would book this in advance, most probably with a tour company, to be honest, and they'd take you there. Now, some people say, oh, fantastic. I mean, you're going to be guaranteed to see turtles. You're going to be guaranteed to see turtle hatchlings being released and all that. The problem I have heard is that, in contrast to a lot of other places, it can be considered expensive. But it's quite a far drive to where you jump the jetty and then you jump on the boat and you get there. But you get there quite late in the afternoon. You have a little walk around. You have your dinner. You get woken up if a turtle is coming laying its eggs. You get the opportunity to see the turtles being released.
Mm-hmm. Which they do at night, which is what you're implying, which is why I went to sleep first. Yep, okay.
Yeah, the night, that's right. And then you go to bed. You get up in the morning. Bill does this 2-day, one-night excursion. By all accounts, you have breakfast, and then you're back on the boat by about 9 o'clock in the morning. I might be wrong, but this is what other people have told me. And then you're away. You get to tick your list, for sure. And what it says you're going to get done is done. But I've just heard that some people do feel they're being shortchanged a little bit, and they would like to spend more time there relaxing rather than being on a schedule and being rushed to get out of the place. And I do say sometimes it can feel a bit too orchestrated.
Okay.
For their benefit rather than the tourists' benefit. Sandakan is also the stopping off point and the starting point for the Kinabatangan River excursions. Kinabatangan River, I'm pretty sure, is one of the longest rivers in Southeast Asia, certainly the longest river in Borneo.
Second longest river in Malaysia.
Ah, okay. Yeah, thank you. The second longest river in Malaysia. And it's along the river there. Some great places to go and stay, rainforests, lodges, and these sort of, again, the homestay aspects of things are very well organized. And I think you get more of a personal feel, to be honest. These bigger resorts, they've met the needs of the mass tourism market, and they've got into that groove. The bus will arrive, get them out, welcome drink, right, look at the river, great, afternoon snack, great. Okay, little chat, okay, jump in a boat, go and see the wildlife along the river, back, dinner, night walk possibility, bed, next morning, breakfast, out. Which is great. If you're on a time constraint, great.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you get to pick your list and you get to see on a boat up the river in the daytime, you get to go on a boat up the river during the nighttime, and you get to see the elephants, the Borneo pygmy elephant. If you're lucky, you'll get to see a wild orangutan in the wild. You'll get to see the proboscis monkey in the wild. The possibility of seeing crocodiles when you're going out at night. Great wildlife. For a wildlife buff and to get out and see nature at its best, for sure. Kinabatangan River is a go-to place. But personally, if you've got the time and you want more of a local feel with a local hospitality, with people that really do appreciate your business and appreciate you being there.
Mm-hmm.
The homestays are great. a lot of what I'm saying is built up upon what I've heard from my customers, and then I recommend my customers to go on and do these different things. Mm-hmm. A lot of people come back with good comments. I feel confident in saying these things, but yeah, certainly the homestays.
Yeah, I always feel that somebody who owns a hotel who's telling you to do a homestay, you ought to listen.
Great, okay. I mean, I am probably undercutting myself here, but at the end of the day, we're all in it to promote Sabah and
right.
to get people to the best places, have the best experiences. Not everybody has the same needs and wants.
Right.
The clientele that we get, the couples who are on traveling in between jobs or having a gap year between works, or the backpackers or the families. When you meet everybody, you can get a gauge of what fits better for different people.
Right.
And that's what we're quite famous for. We're famous for being able to put together itineraries for people that meets their needs and wants, which is what it's about. There's no point in promoting something to a family that are on a budget when you're trying to persuade them to go to a 5-star hotel and pay out through the nose.
Not so much. You started to name a homestay or two that you recommended.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think back now because we've not been open for a little while due to COVID, but...
Right.
Osman's homestay.
Okay.
Osman is a guy who's seen the opportunity, taken the bull by the horns, and has developed his business. As far as I can see, along a very sustainable way of doing things, has done very well. I send a lot of guys his way, but don't let that. There are lots of other guys as well who are certainly this post-COVID situation, like all of us, would be just be very grateful for people coming, very sure. grateful yeah. for the business. And if the love can be spread around amongst everybody, it's a win-win for everybody. I've picked a name out of the sky, Osman's Homestay. And I hope that this maybe helps him and his family to get back on their feet again, etc. I might just backtrack, actually. And Sepilok, places to stay, there is a great place called Pankananandi. Place is furthest away from Sepilok. It does free transfers backwards and forwards to Sepilok. But it's the place that is tucked into the jungle. Fantastic architecture, fantastic ambiance, fantastic staff. And it's just that little bit further, but it's worth that go. Lots of other places, Sepilok Edge of Forest Resort, but Pankananandi is where I stay. And I recommend that as well. Anyway, backtracking. But yeah, Kinabatangan is great and well worth it. These are the sort of well-worn places, tourism routes that people have taken, and certainly if you're on a time constraint. I might just add that to get from Kota Kinabalu to Sandakan is a 45-minute flight, and by road about 8-9 hours
okay.
with the mountain. So it gives you a bit of an idea of the scale, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And that's like the width of Sabah. And then if you're a diver, you would most probably then head away from Sandakan and Kinabatangan area and head towards Sipadan Island, where I worked for a little while as a dive master many years ago. It's billed as one of the top 5 diving destinations of the world. So if you're a diver, it's just phenomenal. Fantastic place. The days I used to go there, a long time ago, we would actually stay on the island, and there was lots of little resorts popping up all over the island. Unfortunately, then there was an incident, and the authorities decided that, I think wisely, to take down all of the accommodations on the island and move people back off onto the mainland and do it as a day dives, two Got tank it. Dives in the daytime and do that. And that, Sipadan is just phenomenal if you're a diver. Now, I'm pretty sure in saying that you have to be at the level of an advanced open water diver to go and do Sipadan. It's that rises up, I think it's 1,300 meters. When you go off the beach into an area called the drop-off, you can get vertigo.
Oh, wow.
We've had that before when I was working there. But the clarity of the water is phenomenal. The marine life is phenomenal. You'll get everything. When you do a multi-level dive, you'll dive down to your 40 meters and you'll look further down. You'll see schooling hammerhead sharks. As you rise, coming up around the reefs, you'll get your leopard sharks, turtles. It's going to sound weird. You'll almost get fed up of seeing them. It's like almost they're in the way. You get the leopard sharks, the bumphead parrotfish. They all tick many, many, many boxes of want-to-be-seen stuff. If you're doing a multi-level dive coming off the drop-off, you probably come into Barracuda Point, and you'll come into a gully first, and then if you catch the tides right, which a lot of the operators make sure they do, you'll equalize and become neutrally buoyant, and you'll just get taken out by the current. And as you're equalized, you get shot out by the current. It's like playing Spot the Marine Life game. All right, there's that. Oh, yeah, there's all that. There's that. And you're not doing anything. You're just sitting there watching the marine life whiz past your face of every different type of marine life that you want to see. And then you get shot out. You get spat out onto Barracuda Point. And there you can be in the middle of a school of maybe about 3,000 barracudas.
Oh,
and
my.
You're in the middle. They're circling you, or a big school of horse-eyed jacks, or something like that. It's a real proper diver's paradise to get proper underwater experiences that you struggle to get anywhere else in the world, and certainly not all in the same place. This is all in the same place, possibly all on the same dive. It's phenomenal. And then you'll come up into the shallower areas, and you'll see the bumphead parrotfish headbutting the coral to break it off so they can chew it, and then pooping the sand out at the bottom, which makes all our lovely beaches. And then you come up onto the reefs, and there you could spend hours, if your time constraint with your dive tables allows you to. But you can spend hours, and many, many people do. The Japanese divers are into the more the micro aspects of things, the nudie branches, the seahorses, the pipefish. Sibidan's shallows are beautiful. Absolutely. It's a myriad of coral and life that is absolutely stunning. And if you're a diver, for me, it's the go-to place. There's lots of other places that are great as well, but it is the go-to place. You can stay in Semporna to meet the budget's needs. You've got the different backpackers there, which then you can go to the smaller dive operators and go out to Sibidan with them. There is now a lottery for trips to out to Sibidan. I think it's leveled at 150 divers per day. And the allocation of those spots to go to Sibidan are divided amongst the dive operators. If I was to recommend a dive operator, hands down, I would recommend Scuba Junkie. I know them personally as people. They've got nothing but goodness behind them as regards to preserving and enhancing the marine wildlife and protecting it and doing all that. And they are very professional in their approach to everything. But there are many others. You could even go and spend your accommodation and your time on board an oil rig. There's an oil rig parked about Semporna, and you can go and stay there. And then let's say, for instance, you're an avid diver, but your partner isn't a diver and is not particularly interested in the diving. No problem. There's an island called Mabul, and it would meet both your needs. The diver would be able to tootle off and go dive Sibidan and the surrounding areas. And then the partner, who's not particularly into the diving, would be able to, at their leisure, just walk off the beach onto some very fine reefs and do some snorkeling, or just sit and chill on the beach and read a book and catch up, let the body recuperate from all the traveling. And if you were interested in having a little wander about, you could also wander around the island. And I've actually not been there, but half of the island, I believe, is like sort of resorty, small operators taking advantage of the proximity to Sibidan and the reefs. And then the other half of the island is like villagers, and they're pretty much Bajau people. And these are known as the sea gypsies because they're pretty nomadic within the sea. The normal everyday tourist isn't going to get to see them in their natural habitat because they can build stilts, houses in the middle of nowhere. You can be on a bus for hours heading towards a destination, and all of a sudden there's a 6 or 7 stilt houses in the middle of the ocean. And you're thinking, blimey, I'm hallucinating or what? But that's the way they run. They're an incredibly interesting culture. Everything is built up around the ocean, and they have tremendous beliefs surrounding the ocean and the defense of it. Anyway, that's one of the cultures. But yeah, if you're a couple and one of you decided that wants to go dive and the other one wants to go, Mabul is pretty good. If you are a little bit more high-end, if you're a little bit more honeymoonery, or you're a little bit more family-orientated and you've got some disposable income and you just want to go and experience a complete getaway island. There's an island called Lankayan, which I've just heard nothing but goodness about, the five-star service and all that sort of thing. And if you were actually into that, and you were into all the marine ecology and a bit higher end and that sort of stuff, back in Kota Kinabalu, either to stay when you first arrive or to treat yourself on your way out, there is the Gaia Island Resort, which is a fantastic place, has a marine ecology and awareness centre, which specialises in giant clam rehabilitation and giant clam propagation. Very interesting, beautiful resort, Gaia Island Resort. But if you're on the other side, Lankayan Resort, Sandakan Way would be very good. And that's all of that. Sandakan is on the east coast. Kota Kinabalu is on the west coast. And that is pretty much the well-worn route.
Okay. We are actually already at the longest episode of The Amateur Traveler. It's just as a time check. Anything else we want to cover?
If I can, I would like to tell you about Kudat. And that's where we are. Kudat is 3 hours north of Kota Kinabalu. Very accessible by shared taxi from a place called Bandaran Bajaya. Cost you 25 ringgit to get there. You come in up to Kudat. Half an hour away from Kudat is the tip of Borneo.
I was going to say, you're at the end of the road here.
That's right, yeah. Tip of Borneo is phenomenal. If you want to go to relax, the best beaches, very good snorkeling, great places to stay to meet all budgets, get away from it all, feel a 3 kilometer beach, and you will be the only one on them. And you'll look at the beach and go, wow, this is beautiful. And then you'll be suspicious as to why there's no one else on it. And we've had people come back and gone, has there been an oil spill or something? Or is there a nuclear? It's absolutely not. It's out there. As an eco-adventure resort up in Kudat, Tampat Dawaman, we specialize in jungle trekking, coastline walks, Rungus cuisine cooking lessons, jungle survival courses. One of our main markets that as we have followed is the groups market. So we bring in school groups and put them back into the community to help the local area with all sorts of different projects. We've had 186 school groups through our doors so far. So if you're a teacher or whatever looking to bring your kids away, we can help meet all your needs. But yeah, Kudat is just beautiful. Seafood, fantastic. Lots of different places in and around the way to get to. Kudat was originally the first capital of British North Borneo. And off the coast of Kudat is the largest island in Malaysia, Bangi. Next to that is the phenomenally beautiful Balambangan Island. Both a little bit more tricky to get around when you get there. But we specialise in being able to connect people then when they come and arrive at our place. We can connect them to the local people and the local area and give them more of an idea of the area and what's going on around it all. So, yeah, if you're coming to Kudat, 3 hours north of Kota Kinabalu, newly discovered the last 10 years, it's a wonderful place to be. We would be very happy to help you.
And we'll put a link to your destination, obviously, in the show notes so people can get that. We're going to probably need to wrap up here so far or break it into two episodes, but I think we're going to wrap it up instead. I've got some wrap-up questions for you.
Yeah.
You are standing in the prettiest spot in Sabah. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Okay. I'm standing at the tip of Borneo.
Okay.
Our beach. 3 kilometers of beach, looking out to sea, looking at Balambangan Island and Bangi Island. It's stunning up here. Absolutely stunning. Biased, but it's stunning.
Well, you chose to live there, so one shouldn't be that surprised that you're biased.
Very, very true. Or if it wasn't this destination, mm-hmm. I would be looking out from the top of Mount Kinabalu over the jungle, or I would hire a car and take him one of the back routes around the back of the Mount Kinabalu, maybe going from Pouring Hot Springs towards Kudat, and I've stopped the car and I'm just looking at pristine jungle, miles and miles of it. Unfortunately, that is few and far between nowadays with the palm oil plantations, but
sure.
Again, we can point people in the direction for those sort of views. It's a place of outstanding natural beauty. I've only touched upon maybe the west coast and the east coast. I've not gone into the interior with Tenom and Tambunan and these different places, the white water rafting places, the Kulu and Padas rivers, the flying foxes, the ropes courses, the paragliding. Sabah is a place full of activities. You can come and do as much as you want or as little as you want. Either way, every need will be met. You'll be very satisfied with your time here. The one thing I just would say is if you plan ahead, you'll get a lot more out of it, like probably most destinations, but Sabah in particular, plan ahead. And if you're getting in contact with someone like me that can give you an itinerary to get the best out of the place, you're probably doing yourself a favor. If you've got time constraints, you need to plan that properly to get the most out of it.
Well, and Howard, I got two more questions for you before we wrap this up. One is, you're not from there originally, so you've adapted to the area. One thing that still makes you laugh out loud and say only in Sabah?
Punctuality.
Okay. Island time?
Island time, yeah. I mean, it's getting better for sure. But if you've come from New York or London or Stockholm and you're used to being 2 o'clock and someone's there at 5 minutes to 2 o'clock waiting, and you cannot, you know, it can happen here for sure. But if it does happen here, you're a little bit surprised. The punctuality of things can be a bit tricky. And the famous saying is, Sabah, I'm on the way. And that could be they're still in bed and you've woken them up to them actually being halfway to the destination. Really phenomenal people. But if you can come here with a little bit of an idea to being relaxed about punctuality, then you won't be disturbing your holiday too much.
And if I ask you to sum up Sabah in just 3 words, what 3 words are you going to choose?
People.
Okay.
Natural beauty. I'll use that as one word. Adventure.
Excellent. Excellent. Our guest again has been Howard Stanton, and I don't think we named the Ecolodge you own. Should I call it the TDA Ecolodge and Jungle Camp, or do you want to give me the real pronunciation?
It's Tampat Do Aman. Tampat Do Aman. TAMPATDOAMAN. And in Rungus, which is local language, it means a place of peace or a place of friends.
Excellent. And I'll put a link to that again in the show notes so that people can find that. Howard, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler. You delivered as I was promised. They said if you wanted somebody who knew the area, talk to Howard. And I'm glad I did. Thank you for sharing with us your love for Sabah.
It's a pleasure. Absolute pleasure. I hope to see you all here. Take care.
Thanks go out, as always, to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. I'm especially grateful for days like today when I had to pay the editors more money to edit shows that are of this length. So thank you for your patience. I hope you got to this part because I thought it was an interesting episode. And thanks again to the patrons of Amateur Traveler. If you also are interested in supporting the show, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more